Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown Giants, 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Metz.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Send us some messages, follow the conversation at hashtag Giants Chat. Or give us a call at 201-939-4513. John Schmuck, Lance Metal with you. The Giants still off that 24-17 victory over the Washington Redskins in our nation's capital. Some good, some bad. And now the Giants, Lance, begin to look ahead to the San Diego Chargers next week. A team that we always joke is the AFC equivalent of the Dallas Cowboys. Always find a way to lose a big game in a big spot. And again, this season, probably a team that's more talented than their record might indicate. Phillip Rivers having a fantastic bounce back year, 70% completion percentage, more than 20 touchdowns, fewer than 10 interceptions. He's been fantastic. And the Giants with a very difficult game against an AFC West team, and by the way, an AFC West division that has dominated the NFC East, spare the Oakland Raiders, so far this season.
Well, the Raiders have even tested a lot of these teams, even if they haven't won the games. They've been relatively close for the most part.
Did they beat Philly?
They
early in the year?
Not played Philly.
They did, right? They beat Philly early in the year,
right? Let's take a look. I just want to refresh my memory about that game.
I believe that was a Vic game.
That was a 49. Yeah, that was what Nick Foles threw 7 touchdowns in that game. I forgot about that.
That's right.
That was what was so notable about that.
Exactly.
Contest.
So Philly destroyed them.
Exactly. Right. And that was the week right before the Giants game because the secondary was broken apart by the Eagles quarterback.
Has Oakland played Washington yet?
Oakland plays Washington, let's see, played them in week 4, 24-14 loss.
For the Raiders or for the Redskins?
For the Raiders.
The Raiders. So the Raiders are the only, they've lost all 4 NFC East teams. The Chargers so far.
And they just lost to the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
Right, and the Chargers beat the Philadelphia Eagles, I believe, early in the year, if I'm not mistaken. They
Nick
beat
Novak
the Dallas Cowboys
had a game-winning field goal, correct.
Earlier in the year, and I believe they beat the Washington Redskins as well, so I think this would be a 4-game sweep
lost
for the San Diego.
The Redskins.
Oh, they lost
to
the Redskins. So that the Chargers trying to go 3-1 against
the
NFC
East. That was
the
game, if you recall, San Diego's in the red zone and they throw 3 times into the end zone, incompletions, goes to overtime in the Redskins.
They had the touchdown on the Woodhead play.
Correct.
The refs called it back and then they had the goal to go. That's right. So, like I'm saying, the Chargers, a very good team, Lance, and the Giants are going to have their work cut out for them.
Well, San Diego, speaking of Danny Woodhead, I think he's also added a new element to this offense this year. They use him out of the backfield. They use him as a receiver. So he's really been a new weapon that they've thrown into the mix. Keenan Allen has had a nice season as an up-and-coming wide receiver. Antonio Gates is still fairly productive, even though he's getting up there in age. They had moved around the offensive line for the most part this season. I think they've seen some improvement. Ryan Matthews has been relatively productive compared to previous seasons. He's also been staying healthy, so that's helped his case. Defense has had, I think, mixed results for the most part. They've had some games this season, John, where they've had leads and then they've just watched it disappear. Washington game is probably one that you can notate. Bad loss to the Texans on Monday Night Football to open the season, where they had a very comfortable lead and they let that slip away. Philadelphia game was relatively close. Dallas, they were down in the first half. They had to rally in the second half. So they've won in a variety of different ways, but they have lost 4 of their last 5, including a game against Cincinnati this past weekend where they were only able to put up 10 points. So as impressive as Phillip Rivers has been this season, I think this offense has been somewhat inconsistent. They've had games where they've been able to light up the scoreboard, and then they've had games where they've struggled immensely. So you really don't know what to expect when they go up against the New York Giants this week, but clearly the Giants haven't had it very easy, as has been well documented over the course of this season. So there's going to be a San Diego offense that you need to be well aware of, and the San Diego defense that it may look like on paper where you can take advantage, John.
We've heard that before, haven't we, Meadow?
Exactly. So, you know, you can only put so much stock into that as well.
No doubt about it. Their pass defense has been poor. Their rush defense has been poor. And that's really where the Chargers have gotten bitten over the course of this season. A lot of close games that they've lost. But their offense, I mean, he has a lot of weapons. Keenan Allen, Antonio Gates is the leading receiver. You mentioned Danny Woodhead. Ryan Matthews has actually managed to stay healthy for a decent part of this year for the first time in a while. And I think where they've really gotten better, Lance, is that Chargers offensive line really struggled for a good two or three straight years. And, you know, a lot of people talked about before the season, oh, Phillip Rivers is done. He was always overrated. He wasn't really any good. Well, look what happens when you get a quarterback a little bit of protection. He has a heck of a year. So I think there are definitely some challenges this week for the New York Football Giants.
Well, they had drafted DJ Fluker in the first round. He was the 11th overall pick, so he's playing the right tackle spot. King Dunlap they also brought in. So they've had some veterans. They've had some rookies, and it really has helped in terms of protecting Phillip Rivers. The same thing can be said for a guy like Jay Cutler prior to his injury, John. Finally, the Bears got good protection for him this season, and all of a sudden he's been able to put up some decent numbers. So that's a big thing when it comes to the quarterback play. And the Giants can relate this season, too. Eli Manning has had the luxury of playing behind a very good offensive line that has a bunch of veterans who have protected him. This season hasn't been the case. They just went through their six different offensive line alignment. As a result, the protection has been very up and down.
Let's get to our calls. 201-939-4513. A lot else to talk about. You can go around the league a little bit if you want. Obviously, last night, the Seahawks basically telling the New Orleans Saints, don't come into our house and try to win a football game. And that could be an NFC championship game type of preview. Though in years past, how often have the 1 and 2 seeds in the conference both ever made it to the championship game? It hasn't happened very often.
Wild card teams have been making a lot of noise in previous seasons. Look at Baltimore, look at the Giants when they won. So you can't necessarily overlook some of these teams that have fallen under the radar early in the season, because as I always say, John, the team that gets hot at the right time is probably the team that's best suited to make a run.
Right, and to me, all three teams in the NFC North now, that's probably, to me, going to be the weakest team that makes it into the playoffs. I think both the Eagles and the Cowboys probably are better than those three teams based on how they're playing now. The Lions, the only exception. I feel like if they can put things together and not have one of those clunker games, they could be a real threat in the playoffs just because of Megatron and Stafford and the way they can dominate a game.
That offense can put up points. Right. I don't think that's a question. The big issue is on defense. If they don't get to the quarterback, they leave their secondary out to dry, and that secondary has been a big issue for this team this season. That's why they've blown some leads, and they've had some very close affairs that they probably should have run away with. So if they could shore up the pass rush, get that consistently going as they did against Green Bay, they're going to be in good shape. That's going to be a team I would not want to see in the playoffs because they can light up the scoreboard.
No question about it. And then, of course, the 49ers and the Panthers, both very dangerous wild card teams. And you can make the argument those two teams will be better than whatever team wins the NFC North or the NFC East.
Well, San Francisco just got Crabtree back. Mario Manningham came back. So we'll see how this passing game develops. Passing game has been 32nd in the NFL for a majority of the season. In Carolina, similar to Seattle, John, they can play defense, they can play offense, they do decently on special
teams.
They
have a quarterback.
Correct.
That's number one. Look, always look at the quarterback first, and Cam Newton's having a heck of a year.
Well, Carolina, to me, is the team that's best suited to go into Seattle and potentially pull off an upset. Outside of that, I don't like anybody's chances heading to the Pacific Northwest.
Those two teams played in Seattle earlier in the year. Correct. What was the final score
of that
game?
That game was in Carolina.
Oh, that was in Carolina, that game? Okay.
D'Angelo Williams has an opportunity to seal that game late, fumbles the ball.
That's
Seattle
right.
Seattle gets it back
and is able to get
that victory.
So I think that would be a very good matchup. The Panthers, I think, would have trouble scoring points in Seattle, but I think that Panther defense would do a pretty good job against that Seattle offense, especially stopping the run and getting to Russell Wilson. Now we'll get to your calls at 201-939-4513. Keith is in Newark. Keith, what's going on, man?
What's going on? I was just overhearing you talk about the Carolina Panthers and the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
I think if they meet again, I think Carolina will have the edge because running the football – I think the only way you can attack Seattle and beat them is attack them at the point of attack in the offensive line, running the football. New Orleans did a bad job of running the football. They got too pass happy, which allowed Seattle pass rush to get to them. I think whoever plays Seattle has to go up there because that's a very tough, hard place to play. Whoever goes up there to play them, they have to run the football effectively and control the line of scrimmage. That will open up the little play-action pass, the little dink and dunks here and there. You just can't go up there and play them straight up and come with a regular game plan and say, we're going to throw the ball 35 times, we're going to beat them like that. You have to have consistency in running the football.
Well, Keith,
when you go to Seattle.
In the Saints' defense, remember, they fell behind early, so that was a big reason why they abandoned the run and they became a one-dimensional offense. But I agree with you. If you have some balance and you're able to open up the play action, then maybe you can toy with that secondary. The one thing that jumps out to me about that Seahawks defense, Keith, is the play of the linebackers. That's why it's very hard to run the football and it's very hard to get openings in the middle of the field because they do such a good job covering all angles, which you can't say the same thing about a lot of other linebacking course.
Exactly, and I think that's why they're one of the best, they're the best defense in the NFL. I don't see anybody beating them in the NFC, not Detroit, not Chicago, not Dallas. None of those teams can really compete with them. The only really team, the really hard test is coming up Sunday when they go to San Francisco, and I think they'll beat them out the water too because San Francisco can't pass the ball. You just said they got Crabtree back. You don't know how healthy he is. Manningham, what has he done since he went to San Francisco? And Frank, they know how to stop Frank Gore in that read option. They play the linebackers down on the line of scrimmage and daring them to pass. And San Francisco can't do that.
However, Keith, remember, you said if you want to beat Seattle, what do you have to do? Run the football. And I promise you, the Niners will give Seattle a steady dose of that running game.
Yeah, they did. And if you look at the first meeting they played, they really couldn't do anything. They only scored 5 points that game.
It was extremely lopsided.
Even though it was in Seattle.
All right, Keith. Thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And remember, it is very different, though, Seattle on the road compared to Seattle at home. Very different team.
However, that's not too lengthy of a trip compared to when Seattle has to come
over
here to play.
No, but
I don't
think it's a matter of the travel time. It's not being in that environment with the 12th man and the noise, which I think really gives that defense an advantage. They get off the ball quicker, or rather the offensive line of opponents don't get off the ball quick as they would in their home stadium. That gives the defensive line an advantage. But I think one thing you have to keep an eye on, Lance, that Seattle secondary is awfully banged up. You have the suspension issue lingering with Brandon Browner. So I think there are some things to look at with them where you could see some holes down the road.
Well, they got a lot of depth, though, in the secondary.
They do.
And even though they are missing Browner and
Thurman,
missing Thurman,
right?
Too, because of the suspension, they seem to find guys that they can plug in. Earl Thomas, one of the best safeties in the league.
Great player.
Richard Sherman, his resume speaks for itself. Cam Chancellor, and they got playmakers back there. And as I mentioned, with the way the linebacking core is playing, it helps also cover up some of the issues and holes you have in that secondary.
201-939-4513. Jeff is in Florida. Jeff, what's going on, bud?
What's up, man? I seen a question on Twitter about when Eli was traded for Rivers 10 years ago.
Yeah, what do you got?
Do you remember the face on Eli Manning when he found out he was supposed to be on the Chargers? Like how sick and upset he looked?
Well, he had no interest in playing for San Diego.
No, he had none. I think it was the greatest thing Giants ever did, getting Eli Manning over Phillip Rivers. I mean, statistically, it just completely makes sense. Who the better quarterback is.
Well, it turned out pretty good for the Giants, considering they got two Super Bowl victories out of it. So certainly this organization's not complaining.
And you know the funny thing about it, Jeff, if we had this conversation in November of 2007 and we had the conversation of who got the better of the trade, people would say the Chargers won that trade going away and it wasn't close. Merriman was still a top-notch pass rusher at that point. Eli was struggling in the middle of that regular season. Everyone remembers that bad game he had against the Vikings. And Phillip Rivers was in the process of leading his team, I believe. Was that the year he got the Chargers to either the divisional round or maybe even the AFC Championship game? So it's just funny. You have to be very patient with a lot of these moves and with your draft picks and wait to see how it plays out because one year it could look great, the next year it looks bad, then it looks good again. So you just have to be very patient when you judge these things.
Yeah. But Phillip Rivers reminds me of Romo with his choking abilities. Eli doesn't choke under pressure.
Well, I'm not sure Phillip Rivers has ever really had. I'm not sure Phillip Rivers has ever had the weapons around him that Eli has had either. I mean, his best wide receiver he had was Vincent Jackson. And when he had Vincent Jackson, he was consistently leading the Chargers into the postseason, into that division round, into that championship round. I mean, the last couple of years, if you look at Rivers' offensive line, his running back, and his wide receivers, it's basically been a one-man band up there, and he's gotten the you-know-what beat at him a little bit, and he's had some issues.
Yeah. Well, it's nice talking to you out, man. That's my opinion. I think it was a good trade.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah, of course. Jeff, of course it was a good trade. And thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. The Giants very happy with the move. And quite frankly, I bet you if you talk to people in the Chargers organization, they're not going to sit there and say we made a bad move either.
Oh, they got Nate Kading, a solid kicker before he got hurt and had to hang it up. And then Sean Merriman, who was one of the best pass rushers in the league before he also got troubled by injuries and other off-the-field issues. So I think it did work out for both teams. I think San Diego wish that Rivers would have taken them one step further, given that they've had some ability to go deep into the playoffs, but because of some mental mistakes or offensive line playing. You know, the other thing you mentioned, John, the fact that he hasn't really had a great deal of consistency with the receiving corps. Outside of LaDainian Tomlinson, he also really hasn't had many healthy running backs to work with, too. So that's also impacted his
2007 playoffs, the Chargers did, in fact, make it to the NFC Championship game, AFC Championship game that year.
Was that with the Patriots?
And they lost to the Patriots. And that game, if I believe, was when Phillip Rivers played an entire game with a torn ACL. So let's not, you know, give Phillip Rivers too much crap. The guy did play in a title game with a torn ACL. Now, it was partially torn, I believe. I don't think it was a complete tear at that point.
Still.
Nevertheless, let's not kill Phillip Rivers too much. In the next year in 2008, he got them all the way to the divisional round. They lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers 35-24. Then in 2009, they lost to the Jets in that first round game 17-14.
Couldn't stop the run in that game.
And they have not made the playoffs in the last four seasons, 2010, 11, 12, and 13.
Now, was 2007 also, if I recall, the game where Tomlinson sat out because of injury and people were critical of him, if I recall? I think Tomlinson was banged up for that game.
Take a look at the box score. By the way, they also beat Peyton Manning and the Colts in the second round of the playoffs that year, 28-24. So that's a little notch on Phillip Rivers' belt right there, too. Let's look at what Tomlinson did in this AFC.
I believe Tomlinson won game against New England. If you look back on his resume, he was hurt, and he sat out that game.
Only two rushes for 5 yards. Michael Turner, 17 rushes, 65 yards in that game. And Darren, wow. They had Turner, Tomlinson, and Sproles in that game. That is a heck of a running back trio right there. That's got to be one of the best three running back combinations in the last 15, 20 years. You got to go back to, like, the 49ers in the late 50s.
You got a little bit of everything with that.
That's fantastic.
A receiver. You got a change of pace back. You got a goal line back. A lot of teams wish they had one of those guys back in the day,
let alone
all three.
And Tomlinson, one of the best running backs in the history of the league. I mean, let's play a game, because the Patriots always move their running backs around. Who was the Patriots' starting running back for that game? He rushed 25 times for 122 yards and a touchdown.
My guess, Corey Dillon?
No, that is, I believe, post-Corey Dillon, yes.
Okay, post-Corey Dillon.
This guy was probably their running back for about half, like a season and a half, you'd say, Salomon. Is that about right?
Why the Patriots do change
running backs. I know they change running backs all the time.
I mean, I'm barely trying to keep up with the guys that they had this season. They've had so many. That's what makes them so effective, because they plug these guys in.
I'm not sure if the guy even picked up with another team after he left New England, did he? I think he was done with the Patriots, then he was just done.
How about a team that he played for before New England?
I don't know. I think that might be his only team. Let me see. Let me see if he played for any other teams. This guy came into the league in 2006, played for the Patriots for 4 years. And then he played 4 games for the Broncos in 2010 before he retired.
Okay.
Lawrence Maroney. Wow. Nile Shah pulling it off. And he's very proud of himself, too. He was very excited about that little trivia
question. He was very animated for that.
He was psyched.
See, it's not just excitement over HTML and everything that the tech guru gets into.
And his new kitchen.
That's correct. Well, we can't overlook that.
Very excited about his new kitchen.
The renovation.
He had Dan Salmon in there with a hammer and the nails, and he was working his butt off on that thing.
The before and after pictures, they're already circulating on Twitter.
201-939-4513. AJ's down in South Carolina. AJ, what's up, pal?
Good morning, John and Lance.
What's up, bud?
I want to talk about the Eli Manning and the Willis trade.
Sure.
That was a good trade for the Giants because, you know, Eli Manning, he won two Super Bowls and two-time Super Bowl MVP.
Hey, look, and I think that's the key here is that even though the Giants gave up a lot for Phillip Rivers, in order to get a talented player and someone that you believe is going to be your franchise quarterback – that price is probably going to be worth it. And in the same vein, I know it looks bad now, but if he manages to stay healthy, figures out how to be a pocket passer, much like Cam Newton did in his third year in the league, and as many number one picks as the Redskins gave up for him, if he doesn't get hurt and he stays healthy and he makes the progress like Cam Newton should, in 5 years they'll be like, boy, thank God we traded those three number ones for Robert Griffin III. That's how important a franchise quarterback can be.
I know sometimes Eli Manning throws like too many interceptions, though. Does Rivers throw a lot of interceptions too? Or who throws more interceptions?
Well, during the course of his career, Rivers has had a number of interceptions, specifically last season. This year, he's improved on those numbers, but he's also been known for a handful of picks, and Eli's up there, too. I would say they're, what, about even, probably, if you look at the numbers over the course
we'll
of their careers.
All right, Eli Manning, in his NFL career, has thrown 162 interceptions. Guess how many interceptions Philip Rivers has thrown in his NFL career? Take a guess.
I'm going to say in the same ballpark.
102. He's thrown 60 less picks.
Wow. I would have thought it would be a little bit more closer.
However, and here's the trick. Eli Manning in 2004 and 2005 played a total of 25 games. Philip Rivers just 4. So Manning has 21 more games. And if you want to go by attempts, Philip Rivers in his career, 3,998 attempts. Eli Manning with almost 1,000 more at 4,879. So at 60 picks in 1,000 attempts. I mean, I'm guessing the interception percentage. Let's see. Eli Manning's interception percentage over the course of his career is 3.3%. Philip Rivers is 2.6. So Rivers is slightly better, but both guys, since they try to make big plays down the field a lot, AJ, do have some issues throwing some interceptions.
All right. Do you know anything about JPP? Will he also on the practice this week?
Well, the Giants haven't had any practice sessions yet this week. They were off yesterday because of the late travel coming back from Washington. So we'll know more on Wednesday afternoon whether he's going to be able to go. But, Lance, I think it's fair to say the Giants will be handling him with kid gloves for the rest of the year.
You don't want to have him re-aggravate something at this point because we don't know how the mathematics are going to play out. But right now it's a very tough situation for the Giants to even get back into the thick of the NFC East race and toy with the playoff ideas. So if that's the case, I mean, what are you going to get out of throwing JPP out there if he's going to aggravate the shoulder or the back injury? And I think it gives you an opportunity to evaluate DeMontre Moore. You know, they have to look at these next four games and say maybe we can get some of these young guys out there to determine do they have a spot on this team moving forward or do we need to bring in a new draft pick or perhaps explore some options during free agency.
Or probably get something in the draft. I'd like to see DeAndre Moore get more playing time. I think he's a good player.
Well, he had a great deal of snaps and appreciate the phone call in this last game, more so than he's ever seen throughout the course of this season.
17, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So that at least is a step in the right direction there, getting him more involved in the game plan.
And he had one quarterback hit in that time. Just looking at the regular season stats, as this was the question that Neely put up there on Twitter, and we'll get back to Giants-Charger stuff. I want to touch one more thing on the Rivers-Manning comparison. And it's funny how much playoff success can affect your general impression of somebody. Because if you look at the regular season numbers, I mean, Philip Rivers has been a significantly better regular season quarterback than Eli Manning. And let me just give you some numbers to back that up. Over their careers, Philip Rivers, 212 touchdowns to 102 picks. That's a better than 2-to-1 ratio. Eli just 226 touchdowns to 162 interceptions. Obviously, a lot worse. Eli Manning, career completion percentage of 58.6. Philip Rivers, 64.3. In terms of yards, I don't have a yards per season number here. Overall quarterback rating for their career, and I know that is obviously a less than perfect statistic. Eli Manning at 82, Philip Rivers at 95.6. So it's just funny how success in the playoffs can color your impressions of people one way or the other. And I got really annoyed, actually, this offseason. A lot of people were, you know, jumping off the Rivers bandwagon, killing them. We did our top 10 quarterback rankings. I had him at, like, 10th in the league. And, boy, you should have heard some of the phone calls I got. People killing me for having Rivers as the 10th back quarterback in the league. They're like, you have him over Robert Griffin III? Are you out of your mind? And I'm like, yeah, he's better.
Well, it's too early to rank Robert Griffin III after just one good season.
Yeah, but
season.
People wanted Kaepernick over him, Russell Wilson over him. And I'm like,
way
guys, Philip Rivers is really, really good. I mean, really good. He's better than Andrew Luck, too, by the way, who's, after a good start, is having a pretty so-so year in Indianapolis. Granted, there are some extenuating circumstances with Reggie Wayne's injury. They can't get a running game going. The offensive line, perhaps, has struggled a little bit. But, look, Philip Rivers right now is still a top-10 quarterback in this league. He's very, very good.
No, the numbers show that. But I say when you compare him to some rookie quarterbacks, there's not enough stock and there's not enough substance there to say, you know, Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson and RG3, Colin Kaepernick. We've seen one good season out of these guys. Let's see them do it for continuations of about 4 or 5 years, and then we can say, okay, now we've got something to compare. Phillip Rivers, he's been in the league since 2004. He has dealt with some injuries, and he's had some seasons where he hasn't put up explosive numbers, but between the stretch of 2006 to 2012, he's thrown for at least 3,100 yards each and every campaign, and he's been in the ballpark of about 21 touchdowns, and he's only had one season where he's thrown 20 interceptions.
And only three where he's had 15 or more. The other, those two, 15 exactly. So he's only had more than 15 interceptions once in his entire career, and he's had more than 30 touchdowns twice. He'll probably do it again this season when it's all said and done. He's had 25 or more touchdowns, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times, and this will be the sixth year this year. So, and yards per game, by the way, Rivers 246, Eli at about 231 over the course of their careers.
And this season hasn't helped Eli Manning's numbers in that category. No,
and frankly, last season didn't, you know, wasn't great for Eli either. I mean, last season at 246.8, that was his lowest number since 2008. So, the last 2 years certainly dragging those numbers down. Eli's by far his best 3 years as a pro were from 2009 to 2011. 201-939-4513. That, of course, in terms of yards. He did have that one bad interception year in 2010 with those 25 picks. But we talked about a lot of tip passes and stuff.
And during that stretch, John, actually, Phillip Rivers, you can make a point of argument that he also had his best seasons during that same three-year period. Because 2009, 10, and 11, he threw for at least 4,200 yards. And he had seasons of, what, 28 touchdown passes, 30 and 27, respectively.
I'd say 08 was probably his best year. 34 touchdowns, 11 picks, 4,000 yards passing, and his team only in eighth. Wow. Your quarterback goes 34 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. You win 8 games. Damn.
They've had a lot of those seasons.
And that's why we talked about it. I mean, just not a lot of help there for Phillip Rivers.
But remember, they've had seasons at 8-8 where they've actually won the division.
That's true.
Because of the mediocrity of the AFC West.
And in 2009, you mentioned they did go 13-3 that year. 28 touchdowns, 9 picks. 201-939-4513. Back to our calls. Roldy is in Bayshore, New York. Roldy, what's up?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance.
What's up, bud?
How are you, Roldy?
What's going on? It was a good dominant win by the Seahawks last night. And I'm watching the game. I couldn't help but wonder. I'm like, why couldn't the Giants' defense be so vicious like that, you know? The way those defensive guys were just all around the ball, just they were just playing vicious. And I'm thinking, I'm like, man, it's not like we don't have the pieces, you know what I mean, to be that type of defense. So it was kind of, you know, bugging me a little bit. Who's the defensive coordinator? Do you guys know?
That's a bad job out of me.
Well,
I should have that
whoever
name ready.
Replaced Gus Bradley.
Exactly.
Gus Bradley was the defensive coordinator last year and then became the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. So, you know, the name is escaping me.
Dan Quinn.
Okay. What is Steve Spagnuolo doing these days? I mean, is he around the league or?
He's a consultant for the Baltimore Ravens right now.
Oh man. All right. I mean, that's, you know, I just couldn't help but just think, you know, I'm like, damn, I wish the Giants could be a vicious defensive group like that, because they got the tools there, they got the personnel to get the job done. I don't know if it's the coaching or if the players are not motivated to be that type of defense. You know, I just don't know what it is. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But that's pretty much what I have today. I just wanted to.
All right, Roldy, appreciate it.
Defend. All right, bye.
Have a good one. Look, I think you need the talent, though. And, you know, you could coach a defense to be vicious and super aggressive and do all these things. If you don't have the players to execute that, it's not going to work. I mean, he mentioned Steve Spagnuolo. You saw the success he had here, Lance. Then all of a sudden he goes to these teams that maybe don't have that level of talent, whether it was the Rams and he was the head coach, or the Saints when he became their defensive coordinator last year, and those defenses look lost and, quite frankly, terrible. You need the players.
And you also need to do well in the draft. Look at Seattle's secondary. Two of the guys were fifth-round picks. When you get that type of value.
Browner was a fifth-rounder, right? Who else was back?
Browner was undrafted.
Really?
Wow. Sherman was a fifth-round pick.
That's unbelievable.
And so was Cam Chancellor.
That's unbelievable.
Earl Thomas is the only first-round pick out of that group. That means you're getting good value between rounds 3 and 7. We've discussed this time and time again. When you capitalize on your picks between 3 and 7 and you avoid having to dip into the piggy bank to have to sign big-name free agents, you're doing something right. And Seattle has groomed a lot of these guys.
One of the reasons the Jets decided to bring in John Idzik as their general manager. Granted, more of a money guy than I think a player valuation guy, but still he was part of that group that put that Seahawks team together. And you wonder, too, Lance, though it depends when those guys are drafted. I have to look at it based on when Pete Carroll got there. Remember, Pete Carroll saw a lot of these guys at the collegiate level. So maybe he gave some good information to the front office to help draft some of these guys.
Well, Sherman played at Stanford. He went up against USC time and time again in the Pac-12. Red Bryant, fifth-round pick. I'm looking now at their defensive line.
Good defensive lineman for them.
A lot of these guys, low-round picks. And that helps. I mean, that's a big reason.
How about their linebackers?
Bruce Irvin, I believe, was a first-round pick. Yes, he was a first-round pick in 2012. Let's see. You know, I wonder how they got K.J. Wright, because he really stood out to me last night. Had a great game. K.J. Wright was a fourth-round pick in 2011.
Look at all these middle-round picks. If you get those middle-round picks to play for you and play well, makes all the difference. It really does.
Bobby Wagner, second-round pick in 2012.
There you have it, folks.
It's not as if they're stacked with first and second rounders. They've done very well in those late rounds.
Or brought in big money free agents. I mean, we're going to see the Percy Harvin trade perhaps have some impact here as this season rolls on. But they've done it with their draft picks, and they've done it in the middle rounds where the Giants really have struggled.
And by the way, speaking of Percy Harvin, I'm glad you brought that up. That could be an X factor for them because supposedly they're shutting him down. They want him to rest up, get that hip healthy. They bring him back for a playoff run. We saw in the one game he returned what he did for special teams. It's not necessarily what he does for the receiving corps, John. He will change field position once he returns.
Do you think they'll play him in a game before the postseason gets here?
I think they're going to rest him up. I think the only time he'll get out there is during practice and maybe when they scrimmage in-house leading up to that game because they'll probably have the first-round bye, obviously.
I feel like they want to get him some field time.
Well, they already did.
I know, but he's not going to play for a month and a half. And then he's going to go out there and need to play his best in a playoff game. I'd like to get him out there a little bit.
He looked pretty good for the limited snaps that he got.
Well, special teams is instincts. I'm talking about route running, you know, getting in sync with Russell Wilson, things of that nature.
I just don't think they're going to have to lean on him as a receiver. I think a lot of these guys have gotten enough experience during the course of the season where the biggest impact he'll make is on special teams as opposed to necessarily running routes. You know, they've turned unknown commodities, John, into –
Well, Golden Tate is actually what? He was a second-round pick for them, I think, Golden Tate? Something like that. I believe he was a second-round.
Well, Jermaine Kearse, did you hear about him prior to this season? He's been making plays for them. Zach Miller at the tight end spot. Doug Baldwin, who's been in the league for a few years. But, you know, these are guys that...
Well, but that's why you could use a guy. Those guys don't have the talent that Percy Harvin has. I mean, Percy Harvin has some ridiculous raw talent that, you know, those guys don't have.
Golden Tate's second round in 2010.
Yeah, that's what I thought. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's happening, guys? How y'all doing today?
We're doing great, Steve. What's up, pal?
Hey, listen, I was listening to the show yesterday, and the whole time I've been listening to the show, you know, I've always listened to my good buddy Len from Columbia, because I actually graduated high school out in Columbia.
Nice.
And his voice is always sound familiar to me. So I'm just going to throw something out here for him real quick, and because I think I know him. But anyway, let him know this is Steve out at Oakland Mills, 1988. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. But you know, I'm back and forth because I own property in Columbia. But anyway, guys, at the end of the show, I'm happy. I don't know if I might be ticking off Tuesday because y'all irritated me a little bit with this stat that Lance came up with about Eli's stats with Hakeem. I think y'all went back to like 2011 or some crazy stat. And all I'm going to say is this.
That wasn't our stat for Steve. Steve. One sec. That wasn't our stat. It was a stat that NBC put up on their broadcast on Sunday. We merely related the information. That's it.
Okay. All right. Thank you for saying that before I kept going on. Number one, because let me tell you, I know I said I wasn't going to defend Hakeem anymore, but I was irritated when I heard that because I was like, who had nerve to come up with such a stat? Because you know, I'm just going to leave to say this. Because you could take all kinds of stats, and you probably need to look at his slot position and his tight end as well. You know, a lot of Eli's success came when Plaxico was there because he could go up and get them high balls. We haven't been able to keep a tight end since Shockey. you know, there's definitely been some things that have played into, you know, Eli's, you know, lack of success this year. You know, especially now I'm looking really had time to look at the offensive line and break things down, especially with Beatty out there on that, you know, that tackle position. You know, he hasn't had things go his way, you know. And with that being said, you know, kind of takes me into my next point is, you know, listen, Eli, you know, great quarterback, you know, as far as him and, you know, Rivers, I would say, you know, it's a tie, but if I had to give somebody a nudge, it would be Rivers. And I just think he's been a little bit more consistent with a lot less, you know, the interceptions, the turnovers, and at the end of the day, you can sit here and say Super Bowls because I love them. You know, I love them. And we've had a good run, but at the end of the day, it's a team sport. And Eli's had great teams. Mostly, you know, it was defense that got us there. It was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of luck. It was a lot of bad play throughout the years. You know, he's, I mean, to me, Eli's like my brother. I'll defend him against anybody, but this is Big Blue Kickoff. But sometimes I think we just need to be a little bit more real. You know, I just, you know, and that doesn't mean thinking my way, but I mean, just look at the bigger picture. It just kind of bothers me that everybody's kind of hanging Hakeem out to dry when clearly Eli hasn't been able to get the ball down the field accurately. And that's the problem, you know, because Victor Cruz should be having much more success, too. The offense should be as a whole. And I think the last point about the quarterback situation is the reason I give, really the reason I give Rivers the edge is because of his leadership. He does. He makes people better. And Eli lacks leadership. You can't just leave with, you know, with play. I mean, that means playmaking ability as well when I take into account, you know, context of a quarterback. So that's how I look at quarterbacks. I think Rivers is able to make more plays, you know, and Eli certainly has had his time to shine, and he has, especially when we needed him in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I'm glad to have him, you know, and I certainly wouldn't want to trade him. Like I said, he's one of my children, so I love him. You know what I mean? He's Big Blue, I'm Big Blue, so I'm going to leave it at that.
Now, Steve, hold on before you go.
Sure.
We're going to have
because I have a couple other points, and then I'll get off. But go ahead, please.
No, that's good. We're going to have a little Oprah moment here, and we're going to bring in Len in Columbia, Maryland, and try to make a connection.
Come on, man. I was
See, you opened up Pandora's box.
Lord. You guys open it up talking about you want to get to know everybody. I call every day. Y'all act like you don't know me.
Len, go ahead.
Hey, Steve, 1988, you're a young man.
Yeah, I'm thinking you might have taught at one of my school, you know, at my schools. I don't know where you taught,
I'll tell you the closest I can get. I didn't graduate from Oakland Mills, but the kids in my neighborhood, the young people in my neighborhood, go to Oakland Mills. So I'm close to your old hangouts.
Yeah, and, well, I have an older brother.
I'm not an Oakland Mills grad.
Okay,
I'm just a little older than you are, Steve.
Yeah, my brother's 7 years older than me. You know, he came out of Oakland Mills in '82. We moved from New York, from Queens, to Columbia, Maryland. So I'm rooted there. I have a house over in Wild Lake area as well. So
There you go. Hey, that's great.
It's good to talk to you. We get together at Rio's on Sunday. If you ever can't make a game, a good spot is Rio's in Laurel, Maryland. We're there every Sunday.
Spell it for me.
R-I-O-S. It's in Laurel, Maryland.
By the way, everybody, you are listening to Big Blue Kickoff Live with your host, Steve, in Washington, D.C., and Len in Columbia, Maryland.
Listen, guys, last I want to say, what is this rumor about this running back, Kendall? What can you tell us about that? Have you heard about us bringing in, working out a running back and their first name Kendall?
Steve,
something?
You have stumped John Schmuck and Lance Meadow. We are looking at each other very confused right now. I got to admit it.
He's a Richmond guy.
We had worked him out like about a year and a half, 2 years ago, but then they brought him in this week, supposedly. So.
All right, guys, just a heads up. Lance and I are going to go run to the bathroom. Why don't you guys cover the next 5 to 7 minutes?
Yeah, I can.
And we'll be right back.
Steve and I will carry the show for the rest of the day.
All right, Steve, thanks for the call, buddy.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, Steve.
Take it easy. Sure. All right, Len, you're still up. What do you got for us?
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing right, Len.
That was fun. Thank you very much.
No problem.
By the way, Len, before we let you talk, I'm looking up the reports. Kendall Gaskins is being circulated around there, former Titans running back that supposedly the Giants may take a look
well,
at.
He's obviously the answer to all the problems. I mean, come on.
Yeah. I think he's a Richmond guy. University of Richmond, former University of Richmond running back.
We will check that out for you.
I kind of remember that name, but yeah, there we go. Championship, Kendall Gaskins. We got this we got our running back problem solved.
He is out of Richmond. You're right, Len.
I thought I remembered him from his college days. Hey, a couple of things. Rewatched the game yesterday, and it's always fun, again, beating a division rival on the road, and having been there, it was great. But just you know, a couple of quick observations that I had noticed as we were going through the year, but just confirmed by watching this closely. You know, our defensive – this has got to be the best tackling defensive backfield we have had in a long time. Now, Hosley is not the strongest of tacklers, but, I mean, even when Corey Webster was playing and, you know, when McBride were playing and the guys we got out there now, I mean, man, these guys can tackle.
Now, you know, Len, that is a great point. The Giants do not allow a lot of run after the catch. All three safeties, including Ryan Mundy, are excellent. Prince is a good tackler. He's gotten a lot better. I think that's a great point that not a lot of people brought up this year.
Yeah, and secondly, and this is more than just the other night also, but those two safeties are just absolutely hammering people. I mean, Hill and Roll are they are just absolutely hammering.
And the funny thing is that, Len, they aren't the biggest guys in the world, but they do not mind lowering their shoulder and laying the wood.
Right. Now, a little bit of bad news from the rewatch. There were times in our running game, 3 and 4 burgundy-shirted players on top of our guy and nobody around. Jeez, the offensive line the other night, it was just – I mean, that was just a bad performance by the offensive line. I mean, the running game never got started. Barry Colfield, who's having probably a very average year, he just had a career night the other. I mean, Colfield was all over the place. I mean, good for him. I always liked Colfield, nice guy. But
good player.
Geez, we couldn't block anybody. Now let me get your opinion on something. It seems like we kind of sold out the other night to stop the run. I think I got the feeling we said to ourselves, all right, if RG3 wants to run with the ball, let him run with the ball. He's not going to go very far anyway. He's playing it safe with that brace on. Even Collingsworth alluded to it. He just doesn't have the same burst. So let's just shut down this run. We'll play everything to stop Albert Morris and Roy Helu Jr. And if Griffin piles up a few yardage, yards on the ground, we can overcome that and win the game.
I think that's true. Yes, I think that's 100% true.
So you think we kind of just played the run? And you know what? I like that philosophy, not just against the Redskins. You know, you got to start somewhere. It seems like if you can stop to really shut down the run, and I think this is what we should do against San Diego, shut down the run. And, put Rivers 2nd and 9, 2nd and 11.
Yeah, but, Len, you know what, though? The Chargers will pass it on first down. They'll do play action. If Rivers sees 8 or 9 men in the box there trying to stop the run, he will audible out of a play. Now, if you're the Giants, you invite Robert Griffin III to beat you with his arm the way he's playing quarterback this year. His accuracy down the field has been dreadful. But, for example, 2 weeks ago with Tony Romo, there's a reason the Cowboys are able to go for 6 yards a carry in that game. The Giants didn't want their best players, which are in their passing game, to beat them. And I think the Chargers are a similar scenario, where their best weapons are their quarterback, their tight end Antonio Gates, Keenan Allen, Danny Woodhead as a receiver out of the backfield. So I think what the Giants do is similar to what Bill Belichick does. They identify the other team's greatest strength, and they say, look, we're going to take this away. So I think this week, they're going to look to take away the passing game. And if they want to run with Ryan Matthews 25 times, I think you live with that because that's not what the Chargers' strength is.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, in the comparison between Manning and Rivers, if you guys get to San Diego this weekend, do me a favor. Check in the San Diego offices, check their trophy case, and see how many trophies they got in there and report back on Monday if you would.
They have a lot of participation trophies, I think, Len.
They have a lot of participation trophies, but they don't have any of the big ones, at least anything recently. Back in the old days, they were, as you know, a powerhouse back in the old AFL. And, you know, one other thing, Rivers, he's a good quarterback. You can't take that away from him. He's kind of a jerk on the field sometimes, but he's a good quarterback. But you know what? I'd like to play a lot of games in that weather too.
That's
and
fair.
If you look at their schedule this year, they're going to play a game in Denver in late December, and that's the only time all year they might get wet. Other than that, it's 72 and no wind. I mean, they played in Miami, in Jacksonville, 8 games at home, Houston early in the season. I mean, it makes such a difference in your game planning and in your ability to keep, you know, throw the ball. I'd like to see Rivers play in that weather that we had against Dallas. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, it does make a big
difference.
Well,
Len, in his defense,
look, he's a good quarterback.
In his defense, he went to NC State, so he's been through some bad weather during the course of his career. It's not as if he's never been having to deal with that.
Oh, yeah, and Len, one more thing before we say goodbye. Lance and I had a little running bet yesterday when we were trying to figure out where you taught, what subject, and what grade, and we kind of settled on either math or history in high school. Is that accurate?
I think it's very important for managers to have a historical perspective of things as they go on. Maybe that gives you a little hint of where I was and what I did. And I did hear that. I kind of got a big laugh. My wife got a big laugh about it. Actually, I taught at the college level.
Oh, wow.
I was at the community college level, taught management and marketing. But I do have a great appreciation for history and the importance of understanding history. When you're in a leadership position, you got to kind of have a historical perspective. But, yeah, I had a lot of fun at it. Never didn't get rich, but then when I went into it, I knew I wasn't going to get rich.
Yep, exactly. Len, I know the feeling. Trust me.
Okay, guys.
Appreciate it, bud.
Thanks for having me on. All right, Len. That was great. Thank you very much.
Wow, Len, big time. Professor. We should all call him Professor Len in Maryland.
Or doctor, too.
Well, he didn't say he had a doctor.
Well.
Yeah. I'm not throwing out doctors like, you know, like people that don't deserve them. All these honorary doctorate degrees annoy the, you know what, out of me too. You know,
doesn't annoy you, by the way?
Well, you know,
we've gotten into just about everything on
this
show.
You get famous and you get invited to a school for a graduation. All of a sudden, you get the doctorate. These people put in real legitimate work to become, you know, real doctors in their fields, whether it's a legitimate doctor or, you know, like the, you know, the honorary degree doctor, whatever.
Well, that's why they're called honorary degrees.
Oprah's probably like a doctor at like 8 different universities. Come on.
You don't put much stock in that. The whole point of that is publicity. They want the name connected.
Yeah, but
then
these yo-yos run around calling themselves, you know, doctors of whatever, like doctors of talk shows. It's nonsense.
What a graduation have you been invited to lately? Maybe we can work that out. Maybe you wouldn't be as bitter.
My graduation from college, it was Mayor Bloomberg's, actually, I believe his first or second one. He was our speaker
at
the Washington Square Park one, and that was his famous gaffe, where another guy that was there was Yankee manager Joe Torre, and he introduced him as Yankee manager Joe Torres.
A little slip of the tongue.
Yeah,
man.
A little bit. Well, Michael Bloomberg, not exactly Captain Sports, and that was very early in his New York tenure, but yes, that was a nice Bloomberg gaffe that everyone got a kick out of.
I didn't realize that there was something interesting that actually happened at your graduation.
Yeah.
I went and got a snack because mine was so boring, I can't even remember what actually happened.
I can't believe you actually showed up to the ceremony.
That's true.
Important things to do.
Well, I did. I took care of other business in between.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Maurice in Montclair. What's up, Mo?
Hey, good morning, John and Lance. How are you doing?
What's up, bud?
All right, you guys partially touched on the point I was going to ask, but I'm still going to ask anyway.
Sure.
I haven't paid much attention to San Diego this year. I was just wondering, like, what's their identity on offense and defense, some of their strengths, and some of the places you think we can attack them at?
Well, they're known for their passing game this season. Ryan Matthews has stayed healthy, but I wouldn't say that they're a powerhouse on the ground. They've got the fourth overall ranked offense, so clearly they're doing something effectively, and they got the fourth ranked passing offense. With the respect to the run, they're 21st in the league. So you really, as John mentioned earlier, you need to make sure that you hone in on Phillip Rivers and you don't allow him to get too comfortable in the pocket and spread the wealth, because he's not necessarily a guy this season that's targeting one guy in particular. When he played with Vincent Jackson, and for Giants fans who enjoy history, and this is going to be bad history, so I'm not looking to necessarily upset you this morning, but the last time the Giants went up against the Chargers, which was here in East Rutherford, remember Rivers hits Vincent Jackson in the right corner of the end zone for a go-ahead game.
Yeah, what was that, 2006?
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, no, it wasn't. I don't think it was that far back.
2009.
It was maybe 2009, there you go.
Yeah.
When San Diego came.
Oh, the game here.
Correct,
yeah, yeah.
I wasn't thinking of the game in San Diego. That was the most recent meeting.
Correct,
yeah.
You're right.
Right. So do you think, like, defensively, like, we can get pressure? Are they banged up front? Like, I know nothing about San Diego at all.
Well, they have a veteran offensive line with DJ Fluker, who they use at the right tackle. They've got Reinhardt. They've got King Dunlap. I mean, these guys have been around the league. Pass protection's improved compared to previous years, but he's, what, been sacked 22 times? So he's had some issues with staying upright throughout the course of this season. 22, I would say, is about the middle of the pack, though.
Yeah, I'd say it's about right.
When you look at the numbers compared to the rest of the league.
How many times do you think Phillip Rivers got sacked last year?
Oh, see, he must have been sacked in the 30s.
49.
Even higher.
Wow.
It was dreadful last season.
Okay, and lastly, do they have anybody on special teams that can really hurt us? Because, like I said, I don't know nothing about these guys.
You know what? I haven't sat down and done my scouting work on them. Let me see if I can 2013 Chargers. Let's see your special teams.
Well, kick Danny Woodhead's dangerous from a running and a receiving perspective.
Danny Woodhead's returned 11 kicks. He's done no punts this year. Lavelle Hawkins has returned 8 kicks. And Fozzie Whitaker has returned 6 kicks. So not a lot of household names. And Keenan Allen and Eddie Royal have split punt return duties. They don't have any return touchdowns this year.
And the reason why John didn't get the scouting report on Fozzie Whitaker is because he's now suiting up for the Cleveland Browns. So John can overlook
that. Oh, he's on the Browns
now? He's on the Browns now.
Now, did you actually know that?
Yes, I did. Fozzie Whitaker has been one of about 1,000 different running backs that Cleveland's used this season. They have
Sounds
a revolving
like
tell
me
door.
He's appeared on the bottom end of one of Lance's fantasy football
No,
rosters.
I haven't been that desperate, I'll tell you that. But I do know my Fozzie Whitakers out there.
And guys, before I go, is this a game where we balance it out, or do we run more than we pass, or do we pass more than we run? I'm just curious.
I think balance. I think you look for balance in this game. The weather should be okay at San Diego, so you should have the opportunity to throw the ball. But if the Chargers are going to let you run the ball at a 4 or 5 yard per carry clip, I think you take advantage of that, and you try to keep their offense off the field a little bit, play a little keep away.
Okay. All right. Good stuff as always, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, Mo. Thanks so much. 201-939-4513. Only 5 minutes to go here. Lance, why don't you start bringing up the picks? We can go through the picks this week and see where everybody is in the standings. Salmon, did you not have a good week, Danny? You're shaking your head a little bit. Oh, Danny. Oof. He is not happy with
this. Dan's already tallying the numbers before I even put my stamp on this.
By the way, this is a big week for Paul Dottino. He was very anti-Manti Te'o during the draft process, and Nova chances to see him this week playing linebacker for the San Diego Chargers. He was fretting the Giants, perhaps.
He's also been hurt this season,
in round
too.
Number one. Yeah, early on, but I think he's been back since then, right? Since
Correct.
He came back from that injury. So we'll get to see him. Not a lot of real, you know, big names on that defense. Eric Weddle, their free safety, by far leads the team in tackles with 61 total. And just, again, not a lot of big names on that defense. They're really in a rebuilding phase, trying to rebuild around Phillip Rivers, and they'll see what they can figure out. And, you know, they have some money issues there, too. I don't think they like to spend a lot of money in San Diego. They've been trying to get that stadium refurbished for a while. They won't even give them a Super Bowl, even though it's in San Diego, because the stadium is in such terrible shape. So they're trying to figure all those things out, are the San Diego Chargers. But, again, their passing offense, and they rush the ball okay, too, but it's really their passing attack that is their strength. So the Giants' secondary will be tested. The Giants, I'm sure, will hope they get Tremaine Bride back this week. They'll hope to get perhaps Corey Webster back this week. And we'll see how Jaron Holsey does his second consecutive week playing more minutes. And, of course, you know, Prince and the two safeties will be there as well. So the Giants hope to be ready. I feel like I did pretty well in the picks this week, Lance.
Not bad. We had 3 teams go 4-2.
That's
you were
it?
One of them.
Thought it was 5-1. What'd I get wrong?
Let's see. You did not get the Philly-Arizona game, right? You picked
the
Cardinals.
Yeah, I picked Arizona. That's correct.
And the other game that you got wrong. Actually, you know what? I take that back. You were 5-1. I miscalculated.
Thank you.
So
I
you were
5-1. There
you go.
5-1. How many times?
You just
here's
got the Arizona
thing.
Game. No, no. Everything else has been tallied correctly. Trust me. You can go back to the archives. Don't try to pull a fast one.
Now,
on me,
all right?
I know
it
you're
is.
Looking for a little edge.
Lance does keep very, very good record here. So I picked up 2 games on Salomon, huh? Salmon went 3-3?
He went 3-3.
How about Dottino?
Dottino went 4-2.
You know, he's got to have a bad week eventually. He picks chalk all the time.
Well, one of these Dottino. Weeks, we should probably pick every game, and that'll be maybe an opportunity to gain some ground.
Let's pick it every game.
Come on, let's spice things up. I think the last 3 weeks of the season,
are you
we should
that
pick
far behind
game.
That you want to pick every
we're
game?
We're actually not that far behind, but I think it would be interesting.
Why don't you
that would be a way.
How about you? You were 4-2 last week as well?
I went 4-2.
Oh, what was Nealay then?
Went 2-4. He takes a lot of risks each and every week.
All right. Well, what's the how do the standings look right now? Give me a standings update.
Tito is 43-24.
Now he's picked six fewer games than we had because he took
that
one
week. Well,
there
was
one
week,
off.
Yeah. Well, he didn't take it off
out of protest.
By choice, yeah.
Now apparently our tech guru Nealay Shah did a good job giving him a real hard time to make
he
sure he started submitting his picks again. So apparently that was on purpose out of protest.
Not surprised.
No.
A lot of drama surrounding our pick selections.
And surrounding those Wednesdays and Thursday programs.
Yes. Oh, boy. Is there ever.
You know, we haven't looked at Twitter. Well, keep tabulating.
Dan is now 45-27. So he is pulling right behind the Tino.
He's what, three games back?
In terms of the loss column. But you have two more wins than Paul because clearly Paul hasn't made as many selections. So I am now 40-32. And you had a one-game edge on me. You are now 41-32. And then Nealay falls to 35-38. So we've got a bunch of teams neck and neck heading into these final 4 weeks of the season. I think at least the last 2 weeks of the year we should do every single game.
At Ben Gruen, by the way, Rivers better than Eli with quote-unquote less Gates, Vincent Jackson, Tomlinson, an awful division for years. How is that less? The point wasn't that Phillip Rivers had less than Eli Manning earlier in his career when he played so well and had those great records. That certainly wasn't the case. We were more discussing his performance the last three seasons when, obviously, Tomlinson was gone. They lost Vincent Jackson. Antonio Gates hasn't been the same player. Has been banged up. Those are the years when Phillip Rivers had less around than Eli. Not necessarily those first few years, you know, 7, 8, and even 2009. We're talking more the 2010 to 2012 era San Diego Chargers, Ben, not earlier on there. Let's see what else we got here. Nothing else that seems to be of note. Quiet down, hashtag Giants. Chat.
Well, Mike Farmer also points out in terms of the Chargers scouting report that their other tight end, Ladarius Green, has been making some plays in recent weeks. They have a lot of guys that probably you never heard of, but believe it or not, they are making some plays. And the other guy to keep close tabs on, the hero from the Kansas City Chiefs game, Shea Jiratutu. Yes, say that a few times.
I actually got that on the air the other day, Jiratutu.
I think somebody helped you out in terms
of the
breakdown of the pronunciation.
I'm busy producing the game. You're back there lounging in the back of the booth. I had to ask
Oh, so now we're making excuses about you actually do multitask at some point.
Apparently, we don't have a big fan in Dave Schwartz on hashtag Giants Chat.
Yes, I did. Well, I don't know if that's from a technical standpoint or a content standpoint.
I'm assuming it's a content
standpoint.
There
you go. Well, I try to read between the lines.
This is also a slower day, Dave. So I would tune in on Friday when we do some hardcore preview of Giants Chargers. I think you might like what you hear.
Well, listen, we could throw out a review of numbers. I was doing some tallying of the numbers, which I always do on Mondays, to just see how the Giants are doing from a trend standpoint. The running game, because we were talking about maybe what they're going to do against San Diego, last four games they had three contests in which they ran the ball at least 30 times. Only ran it 23 times against the Redskins. Yardage per carry wasn't great. The other thing that jumped off to me about the running game, which I thought took a huge step back, 18 runs for 3 yards or less in this game against Washington. They just really had the two runs for 27 and 23 yards, which was Hillis and Brown, if you recall. Hillis set up that touchdown. Outside of that, it was dreadful. I mean, they were like running into a brick wall. So that's something that, you know, the Giants really want to bounce back this week because the running game had been the bright spot on offense. And this has been a down year from a big play perspective. They've got to get that running game going. And I think San Diego is a team that you can run on, but you've got to get productive runs where you're not just moving for no gain or you're moving backwards.
Yeah, and I had Eli Manning on our pregame show a couple weeks ago, and he made the point, and I thought it was a good one, that, look, I can live with 3 yards a carry. If you get 3 yards a run, you're looking at 2nd and 7, you're looking at 3rd and 4, and all of a sudden you're in positions where you can run any play you have in your offense. You can run it again, you can play action, you can throw it down the field, you can throw it short, and the playbook opens up. But when you get into 2nd and 11, 2nd and 12, 2nd and 10, it's hard to run the football in those situations. You almost have to throw it, and it really limits what you can do in terms of play calling. On 2nd and 11, a play action pass isn't going to be nearly as effective as it is on 2nd and 7 or 2nd and 6. So the running game can really have a domino effect on the rest of the offense.
Well, in terms of the third downs that you were just alluding to, they were 4 for 12 against the Redskins. They had 5 third downs that were for 5 yards or less, and they had 3 for 10 yards or more. So the numbers don't necessarily jump off the page in terms of the efficiency, but as this season has progressed, they've been facing less and less third downs for 10 yards or more. And a big reason why is because, as you just touched on, John, they've been running the ball more effectively. They've gone, in terms of third down efficiency, they were in the 20s for a good portion of the season. They're now up to 35%. That's only 25th in the NFL, but compared to where they started, I think they've made big strides. They've also been better defensively on third down. Opponents have succeeded on about 40%. Of their third down attempts. So that ranks them also in the low 20s, 24th. But once again, compared to where they started, they've also made improvement in that category.
One other point I want to make before we say goodbye here, Lance, is about to wrap up the show. If you take a look at the combined records of the teams the Giants have beaten and the teams the Giants have lost to, they are polar opposites. The only team the Giants have beaten that's over 500 are the Philadelphia Eagles. And the only reason they beat them that game is because Nick Foles wasn't playing and they had Michael Vick on one leg and Matt Barkley for a half. The Packers are now under 500. They had their backup quarterback in that game. The Raiders are way under 500 now. The Chargers this week are also 500, under 500, by the way. The Redskins, one of the worst teams in football with only 3 victories to their name. And the Minnesota Vikings, under 500 as well. So the Giants, when they've played a team that's been a 500 or better team, generally speaking, they haven't been able to win those games, but they've beaten a lot of the teams they should beat near the bottom of the standings. So we'll see what they can do with the San Diego team this week that both of us think is probably better than their record, but they still sit under 500, and I think it'll be a very, very close contest.
Well, they've had some games where they've blown leads, so that's why their record is below 500. They're going to have an opportunity to make a statement against Seattle and Detroit, which are two teams that are above 500. So the rest of the four games remaining, you have two teams that are in the playoff hunt, two teams that are out of the playoff hunt, though technically San Diego, from a mathematical standpoint, is still very much in the mix because that sixth seed in the AFC, there's, what, 7 or 8 teams, and some of those teams are 5-7, 5-6, 6-6. So San Diego, if they're able to put things together in these last four games, they could almost sneak in. Baltimore right now is in the driver's seat because the Ravens have been able to turn things around in recent weeks, but that doesn't mean that they're a lock to get in because Baltimore's a very tough schedule coming up.
Lance, we appreciate the time as always, my friend.
Sounds good. We'll see you later in the week.
Lance and I will be with you on Friday morning on Big Blue Kickoff Live. That comes your way at 9:30. Then we'll be hosting Big Blue Hits as well on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock. But until Friday, you have Big Blue Kickoff Live on Wednesday and Thursday morning with Paul Dottino and Anita Marks. At 9:30, make sure you check that out. And, of course, on Giants.com throughout the week, we finish our review of the game and win against the Redskins, and we begin to look ahead to the San Diego Chargers matchup in San Diego on Sunday. Lance, have a great one. We'll see you on Friday.
You as well.
For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmelk. Have a great day, everybody. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com for your official source of New York Giants news all week long. Have a great one.